This is the Paper Planes podcast, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
And I've seen, you know, a lot of businesses who initially started with an idea and they kept on moving, pivoting. And, you know, they finally sold something that people do want. And with courses, you know, you need to be able to sell this transformation before anything.
Welcome to episode number 86 of the Paper Planes Marketing Podcast with me, your host, Simon Dell. If this is your first time here, you're in for a bit of a treat. We have a guest called Tom LeBelt, who is a who's currently living in Thailand, but originally from Poland. And he runs a business for called WeMarketOnlineCourses.com. I'm not going to be condescending enough to explain to you what his business is, because if you can't work it out from that URL, then yeah, perhaps you shouldn't be listening to this podcast. But given where we are at on the 30th of April, as I record this in 2020, in the middle of a coronavirus crisis that has pretty much decimated the world, sadly, with many tens of thousands of deaths, but also with millions of businesses and livelihoods shut down and in some cases shut down forever. Understanding how to build an online course could actually be a lifeline for many, many people out there, many people with skills who've seen their potential businesses crumble, or people with skills that need income at this time and moving forward from here. So Tom is a wealth of knowledge. It's tragic that we only get 37 minutes with him, but hopefully all those 37 minutes are useful for you out there to learn some of the skills and some of the suggestions that Tom has picked up over the years. Before we jump into that, we'll do our normal housekeeping. If you are interested in talking to me or Matt about our business, we are digital marketing consultants. We work with people all around the world. Our website is flypaperplanes.co. So by all means, come and see us. You can find me on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, Simon Dell. There's a few Simon Dells out there, one that does some very strange photography, but I think you can probably guess which one is me. Love to talk to you, love to have people connect with me on LinkedIn, and especially people that can connect and let me know if they found any of our podcasts useful. If you do get an opportunity, this is podcast number 86. There were 85 before this. There are some fantastic guests out there. Please go back and have a listen to some of them. My last little bit of housekeeping is Gilberto. Gilberto is our sound engineer who puts all this stuff together. He is at thepodcastboss.com. If you're thinking about doing your own podcast, and you should, but if you're thinking about doing a podcast or recording any kind of audio, Gilberto is the man to speak to. So that's pretty much it for my intro. Not got much else to say. I hope you are all keeping well out there in these strange times. But let's jump into the interview with Tom LeBelt. Welcome to the Paper Planes Marketing Podcast. And today I am with Tom LeBelt. And Tom is somewhere in Thailand, aren't you, at the moment?
Yeah, south of Thailand, Klong Muang, overlooking the beach from my window right now.
Brilliant. And for those of you who want to pick that up, that's obviously not a Thai accent. So where are you from originally?
Originally from Poland. Moved to the US when I was around 10. And when I was around 33, 4, just started living all around the world.
Awesome. And you have a excellent job that allows you to do that, I guess. So one of those lucky people that gets to pretty sit on a beach with a laptop, really, don't you?
Well, it's like I'm, you know, in an air-conditioned space with a window. Like I never get those pictures with at the beach with a laptop. Yeah. I don't know how people
nobody shares those pictures. Yeah, nobody shares those pictures. Now, you are the owner of a platform called wemarketonlinecourses.com. Even the galactically stupid people out there will probably guess what you do from the title of the website. But just for everybody's benefit, give us a quick overview as to what you do on a day-to-day basis.
Well, on a day-to-day basis, I'm, you know, trying to make sure that my clients sell courses, right? So that's the whole idea with the service, you know, and then any project I tackle, that's the only goal. Like the goal is not to make your, you know, sales page look beautiful and to, you know, make your sales funnel pretty so you can, you know, share it with your friends. It's only so that someone comes in, you take them through the sales path of least resistance and they buy a course, right? So that's the whole strategy behind it. And, you know, once again, a lot of variables, it's marketing, you know, so a thousand things that could, you know, go wrong and have to be you know, reiterated. But that's the whole thing, man. We market online courses. I make sure this brand is as simple as it gets.
Well, it does sound simple, but I guess the process for what you go through is fairly complicated. So we're going to talk about that today. And we're going to talk about that because you and I have spoken before, but we're going to talk about that. Perhaps it's more important now, given what's happened in the world, that this is obviously being recorded at the end of April 2020, when we are coming out of a virus crisis that has engulfed the world and seen many, many businesses, millions of businesses shut down for short terms, long terms, sometimes weeks, sometimes months, you know, and a lot of people have seen businesses fail because of this. So I guess what we want to talk about in context is people that I've been thinking about building an online course. Maybe for the past couple of years, but especially for the last 6 weeks. So you must have seen, I mean, I guess you must have seen an explosion of people trying to put things online in the last 6 weeks.
I've seen an explosion of that. I've seen more people than ever, you know, and I spoke with some of the other platforms about this. I've seen more people than ever sell their first thing online in the last month. And I've seen a lot of the more established course creators make more in April than they did in a whole year previously. So
so it's virus is a good business for online course creators.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it's more luck than, you know, anything that I'm in the niche. You know, I can't say I had any doing that. But yeah, the online course space, a lot of the e-commerce spaces, because I have a friends with stores and things, and they're, you know, there's just outrageous amounts of business right now. But, you know, on the other side, there's, you know, a lot of businesses that are doing well, they stopped. So if you're in the online course space or thinking about getting into it, I mean, it's definitely the easiest it's ever been to sell something online.
And prior to talking to you, I did a talk on Tuesday lunchtime to an organization called CCIQ, which is the Chamber of Commerce and Industry Queensland, to their members, so about 200 odd of their members. And we were talking exactly about this thing about getting online, putting a course online, taking your knowledge and building an online course. And I came up with some examples for them of people that have done it in the last few weeks. And my favorite one is a website called youprobablyneedahaircut.com.
Yes.
So have you seen that one?
No, but it's the same type of branding as mine, right? Like you tell me, I'm like, yes.
Yeah. So they do a video chat with a stylist who will coach you through a live haircut.
Man, this could come out really well or really, really bad.
I'd imagine there is a massive disclaimer at the start as you sign up saying that the terrible haircut that you're about to inflict on yourself has absolutely nothing to do with them.
I think the disclaimer should be just borrowed from the same people who have you jump from airplanes.
Yeah. Look, I think it was a fantastic idea. I found it the other day and I thought, there's always winners out of these situations.
There's actually a lot of winners. Well, I'm in a bubble in this, you know, in this industry, but I'm seeing just tremendous growth for a lot of businesses, and it's kind of hard to, you know, to say it, but you know, for me, it's, you know, it's, and for a lot of online guys, it's like, well, yeah, this was probably one of the like best things that could have happened to the industry, right?
Yeah.
Because what's happening now is a lot of people who have never done things online, it's forced them to learn, right? So some of the older folks, you know, it's the first time they had to order something online or complete some kind of a transaction or get a delivery by, you know, doing something online. So it's forcing people to go online. And, you know, once again, it's like riding a bike. Once you learn it, it's like, well, why should I do it any other way later on? Unless it's like, you know, getting groceries, getting a haircut, or going to the gym. Like if I, you know, I can't find anything in the store anyway, so let me just go online and figure it out. Yeah, so it's a great thing in online space.
So if anybody's listening to this and they're thinking about building an online course, whether because of what's happened in the last few months or whether it's that they've been thinking about doing it for a long time, what's the very first starting point that you say to people they need to think about?
You have the expertise, you know.
That's obviously sounds fairly obvious now you say that, but yeah, okay, no, go on, keep going.
Yeah, so you know, I've spoken to a lot of people who, you know, come up to me with ideas, and you know, the thing with a course is you need a transformation, you know. So like you take someone from my hair is a mess, now I have a great haircut, and there's obviously, you know, the transformation happened, there's a value on that, how much does a haircut cost, you know. So you need these components in every course. But you know, I do run into people who, you know, like, well, why you want to build this? I just been traveling, you know, for the last few months, now I want to go back to work. I'm like, well, you know, but that doesn't qualify you to give diet advice, you know. Or you know, someone recently, you know, I'm creating a course on, you know, how to not get sick from COVID. I was like, are you a doctor? He's like, no, I'm an SEO guy. I was like, well, you know, there's a disconnect, right? Like, I'm not qualified to give you any advice to anyone. I'm not working with you. So, yeah, I mean, just the expertise, right? Like, obviously, you need to know what to teach someone. Like, and, you know, it could be something you experience or you've done, or you can show some examples that you've led people through. You know, if you have that already, and then, you know, so on, you can actually draw out this transformation. You have the expertise. Then the second piece is there a value to it? You know, some courses are easier to value than others, right? Like, you know, if I'm teaching you how to, let's say, pass a course yourself. So pass an exam, get a certification, right? There's a much easier transformation value there because it's external, right? Some companies said, like, I will hire you if you pass the Series 6 or pass the CPA exam. And they know if they don't pass it, that's a $60,000 job out the window. Very easy to put a value on it. Where others, it's not. You know, I'm going to teach you how to speak better, or I will teach you how to perform better. Like, you have these very vague transformations. And then, you know, a part of the marketing process, which is 80% of the whole job in selling it, you know, like from a course, is figure out, one, how do we put a value on this? You know, how do we position it so that there is not only a product and market fit, you know, which you need to sell anything, you know, service anything, there's going to be a fit. There's also an educator fit, right? People need to like you and want to learn from you, right? So we need to position the whole, you know, it's like a triangle that needs to kind of match up for you to have this, you know, thing work.
So let's assume that you've got the experience, you've got the knowledge, you're confident that you've, you know, got a transformation that you can take people on. Would you be sitting there saying to people, right, that you need to map that course out, you need to write it all out, break it up into segments before you start recording stuff? Or is it, you know, start recording stuff and then work it out as you go along? What's the best process for you?
Well, I usually, anytime I sell something, right, I want to make sure that the market wants what I'm selling before I make it, before I really build it, you know. And with courses, you know, you need to be able to sell this transformation before anything, right? So you need to sell people on the idea that, yes, I will give you, you know, $297 to help me with something. So you know that there is a want, the market wants this. And, you know, then you can create the course based on whatever sold. You know, so pre-selling is a big thing, but, you know, think of it not as, you know, I need to design a beautiful funnel and put all the steps. No, like initially, you just need to make sure that people want to buy this transformation from you.
Right.
And you can say that, you know, you are, you know, selling it to the at a discount to the first 50 people, and, you know, the course will start in 2 weeks if we get 25 people in. If not, I will refund all the money. Like, you can, you know, position it in different ways. But the danger of building everything up front, and I've seen this happen, is, you know, someone comes up, it's like, Tom, I built this huge thing on how to build private practices stress-free. It's a great course. You know, people are stressed out and I want you to market it. I'm like, okay. One, stress means different things to different people. That's a very vague transformation, you know, saying you're going to be stress-free. Yeah. I don't know what the value is. Like, I don't really get stressed out from work. So the value to me would be zero. Maybe to someone else is more. So one, that's a big problem. You know, you haven't sold any of these, you know, so you haven't tested the market. It's possible that if I start positioning it, people will say that I don't care about your stress-free transformation. I want to get my first client, or I want to, you know, something else. And then your course now doesn't fit what the market wants. So I've had these situations, like, you know, with a public speaking course, I found that people want to know how to persuade others into doing things more than be able to public speak, right? So once again, I was like, that's a beautiful course, but nobody cares about it. And what I'm able to sell, you just don't have, so you have to remake, right? So that's the danger of building before you test the idea, right? Now, you can, you know, create the outline, you know, because if you, you know, you're selling a transformation, you'll tell them the steps. Like, you know, you're not going to tell how or why, but you just tell them these are the steps, this is the value, this is how I'll transform you, and this is, you know, do you want it? And if people say yes, well, then you, you know, you got a business going. If they don't, then, you know, think of that saying, you know, people said, like, you know, it takes 10,000 steps to master anything. Well, it takes 10,000 reiterations to make a great business. So you reiterate until people do want it, right? So you just find that thing. And I've seen, you know, a lot of businesses who initially started with an idea and they kept on moving, pivoting. And, you know, they finally sold something that people do want. And it's in the same niche, same buyers, but just very different angle and you know, and different outcome in some ways. But yeah, pre-selling is key, at least the idea, right? So one thing I can add that I've seen, you know, because we're talking about high value courses, right? We're not talking about the crap sold on Udemy.
Yeah.
You know, often just an application through a phone call, right? Because if you can sell and, you know, see what the people are, you know, where's the friction, the objections, things like that in the first 25 sales, that is all you need to create a sales page or a video that will now work without you having to make those phone calls, you know?
Right.
So you're using that data. You actually, I recommend highly to initially talk with your customers, you know, because they'll give you everything you need for the copy. You don't need to worry about copywriters or any nonsense out there. That's all you need. That's all the weapons you need to kind of get your, you know, website working.
Would it be worth people like doing a short, you know, maybe an hour long course or something and testing that out in the marketplace before they obviously sit down and record lots of content? Is that worth doing it?
I mean, once again, it could be a completely wrong course, right? Like, it might make more sense where, you know, let's say you have an outline, right? And you came up with 30 modules, right? Like, because it's going to take these many to teach people, right? So there are going to be some key concepts that you will teach someone, right? And often I would test maybe this key concept theory to sell the course, right? So let's say if we have, you know, four different concepts, you know, and then little gold mines in there, like, you know, like this golden nugget, that golden nugget, you know, this helps a lot. It moves people through. Why not do like a 3-day challenge around one of them? Why not try like a 3-day mini course that just teaches people this one little concept, and they're like, oh, wow. You know, if you help with this, I want to see what else. But what that does too is it gives you the entry point. It shows you where the interest is, and it kind of helps you build on the back of that, right? Because then you can be like, well, I know what brings people in, and I know that this is a good path, but now what else, you know, from this course? Does the rest work, right? Like, if I teach you how to be comfortable in front of the camera, just example, that'd probably be a crappy idea. But if I, you know, teach you that, then maybe why do you want to be, you know, comfortable in front of a camera? Is it because you want to sell? Is it because you want to do presentations? Is it because you want to create a YouTube channel? So you might be more interested in like some of the tactics and strategies to grow the YouTube channel to 1,000 subscribers. You see what I mean? Like what, like what are you doing after this first step? And then you kind of build it. You can build in like 50 different directions. Mm-hmm. But it's good to kind of take pieces out and at least, you know, okay, well, this piece people are interested in, so I can kind of build on that. If I know they want to be comfortable in front of a camera, now we have at least a starting point, right? Where I can teach you like why this is probably important, you know, and if you kind of spoke with your customer, maybe, you know, through emails or however, and this is why they're speaking with them, you know what the outcome is. And one of your customers might actually give you the idea for the course, right?
You mentioned something earlier on in terms of price, and we'll talk about price in a bit more detail later on, but you said something that I see all the time where people price it in a weird way where they go like $297 or, you know, $197 or $400, whatever it is, but it seems to always end in a weird and strange number. I mean, not that seven is a weird and strange number, but you know what I mean? It's not rounded up or anything like that. Obviously, there's a lot of marketing psychology around pricing. You know, you price things at $299 because the people's brain sees the two and they don't see the three. The fact that it's $3, $299, $3. What's the reasoning for you kind of picking those quirky numbers for a pricing for a course?
Well, if you ask, you know, the majority of people what their favorite number is, it's going to be usually seven.
Right.
Right. So one, they see the two in the beginning, so they don't see a three. So it seems like it's less, but it's not really, you know. That's why you see, you know, gas stations always going like, you know, 287, 288, 289, just, you know, to not hit the number. But I like the number five or seven or maybe four because that's a favorite number for a lot of people. So I just test like, you know, in my market, what's the majority? And it kind of, you know, it's, people are not logical, right? That's why you use a lot of these little techniques because, you know, it might just cause the conversions to go up. And there's like no real rhyme and reason for it. But for me, I always think about it. That's the most common lucky number for people. And they're like, oh, okay. Yeah.
That's fair enough. Let's talk about format. I mean, again, I guess there's no right format for you know, any course, but what do you see works better? Is it video? Is it audio? Is it just text? Or, you know, or should it be a mixture of all of those kind of things? How would you sort of advise people to think about the format of what they're putting in the course?
Well, always think, you know, of yourself as a customer, right? And we all know that people learn in different ways, right? So if you want to become a good educator, you kind of tailor it towards everyone, right? So you have the text, the video, the audio, right? Because people, once again, learn in different ways. That's the only way to think about it. As to the actual course itself, you know, we have, you know, two different types of buyers. We have the Walmart buyers. You know, if you're in America, you know what Walmart is. It's like a discount store with, you know, cheap pricing. And you have like a Nordstrom buyer, which is more, you know, popular than, So there's a key difference between those two, right? The Walmart buyers, you know, the cheap course buyers, they like a lot of things. They like to buy bargains, bundles, you know, give me 30 hours plus 15 bonuses and some toilet paper. Super happy. They'll probably never take the course, but that's what they want. The Nordstrom buyer, and this is where you're going into that, you know, 300, 400, 500 and up, you know, price range, they value their time, right? So they actually know that, you know, maybe 1 hour of my time is $100. So if you're going to sell me a 30-hour course, that's $3,000 or whatever of my time, plus the price of your course. And, you know, so what they're looking for is the quickest and easiest way to transform, you know, to take your course, right? So if they're trying to run a campaign on Facebook, if you can help me in 30 minutes to do the same thing as this other guy's promising in 10 hours, I will pay you that premium because this is what I want to do as fast as possible, efficient, right? So when you think of your course, if you're pricing it higher, you actually want it to be as, you know, fluff-free as possible.
Because so actually, the higher the price, the less content almost.
Yeah. Well, it's just the 80-20, right? So the most important.
Yeah.
There's a guy, a friend, Anton Crowley, who created a course before. It was called a drop shipping lifestyle. This was like 5-6 years ago. I don't know if it's still around. But the course became huge because it had a big transformation around it. You know, a lot of the people who were doing the drop shipping back then, because it was easier, were making 5-6 figures in their first year. great transformation thing. The course was initially maybe 40, 45 minutes when he showed it to me, and it was selling for $1,500. And people were buying it like crazy. And I looked at it, and he was right. He took me exactly, because I just see maybe two modules just to see how he was positioning it. He teaches me like why he's doing it, where he's finding the product, how he's finding it, how to put the first product out, how to get your first sale. I mean, it was just so like, it took me through this path, and I'm like, dude, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was very short, a very short course. But I mean, it was like, if you just followed it, and obviously, you know, you have to think a little bit because, you know, you're still running and creating a business. But I mean, just the path he took you through, I'm like, wow, I don't need to think about any of these external things. Like, you know, where do I put this out? How do I write up the description? What kind of picture? He showed you. He showed me everything very quickly. Yeah. Do it like this. Do it like that. Do it like this. Make your sale. Keep going. Keep going. Right? So that's kind of what you want to do for those Nordstrom shoppers if you're thinking about, you know, how the course should be made.
Yeah. Does quality I don't necessarily mean quality of content, but does quality matter? So like, you know, if you're recording video or, you know, if you're releasing PDFs or, you know, should the video be recorded with a proper videographer or is your iPhone as good enough? And should PDFs be branded? I mean, how, you know, how much effort should you go to if you're, you know, if you're releasing a course like that?
I only have two thoughts on this. The first one is, you know, when you think about Google, for example, and Google says, you know, I want you to write quality content. And I've never heard anyone describe what the quality content is properly. Yeah. We don't know, right? So this is very vague. But I'll tell you this. Great quality videos will not save bad content.
Absolutely. Right?
And
absolutely.
Great content will sell even if it's a poor video.
Even if it's poorly produced.
Yeah. So you obviously want, you know, as professional as possible, especially if you're trying to run a business like MasterClass. You know, you're not going to take someone that's super famous and then put them on a grainy video, right? Because that's their business model. You know, we're bringing the most known celebrities and experts, and, you know, you need a top-notch production for that. But for yourself, you know, if you're teaching dentists how to get 30% extra sales next month, do you think that dentist is going to care because your video is grainy if you teach them how to do that? No. Not at all. So I wouldn't really worry about that. Obviously, as you grow your business, you want to improve, right? So when you get the money, you can remake things and make them much, much, much better professionally. Mm-hmm. But it's not needed to start at all.
Okay. And talk to me about platforms. We've started building something in Teachable. We've got another client that's building something in Teachable. There are a lot of these things cropping up everywhere. I'd imagine someone like yourself is fairly platform agnostic, but, you know, what sort of platforms do you gravitate to? And when we spoke before, you also mentioned about taking the payment processing outside of some of these platforms. So interested to hear about that as well.
So I'm big on control, right? Like if I'm thinking of my own business, I really, you know, want to control the process. I want to control my sales pages. I want to control my payment process, you know, and then the only reason the platforms exist is to host the course, right? Yeah. And almost all of them do it poorly. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous, right? Like Thinkific and Teachable, you know, I like both, you know, and they're both known for downtimes, and, you know, Teachable customer service is horrible. You know, Thinkific has their own problems. You know, we had a payment problem once, I remember, where PayPal didn't work for a week and they didn't tell us till 5 days after, you know. So like I feel like, okay, fine. Like your only job is to host the course, and you're barely doing that properly. So I'm definitely not, you know, like you need to go with this or that platform. I think initially either of them will work. Zendler has been getting a lot of attention lately because they're making the sales process easier, which means they're helping you sort of map things out and then put them up. But once again, there's a control aspect. Do you really want that platform to do that? right? Even if it does it well. Kajabi, I know a lot of people have, you know, it's a little harder to maybe set up than just uploading, but it's, you know, a lot of people are very happy with it. And those are, I think, like the big four that I usually work with.
Okay.
But I don't think the platform really matters as much. You know, whatever you put it on, eventually, if you get big enough, you're going to build something custom of your own. That's what always happens, right? If you get big enough. But yeah, you know, platform's a platform.
So I guess, you know, you've got your platform, you've got your content, you're the expert, you've tested it out with the marketplace. I guess the last step is really building audiences. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts in, you know, the best way of building audiences. I'm also interested to hear your thought, because when we spoke last time, you said something to me that really kind of, you know, blew my mind or put the light bulb on, is that there's a 1 year lag, or a, you know, 365 day lag between someone finding out about you and then actually purchasing your course. So talk to me about that, because that's really interesting.
So if you've been in the online space for a while, like the main thing that, you know, people are scared of is the scammers, right? Because, you know, making money online, people come, people go. So half the battle is to get people to trust you. And what we usually found with courses is that if the people don't buy in your initial offering, so for example, if you get some cold traffic in, you know, from wherever it is, and you maybe drive them to an opt-in page or a webinar, and then you run them through your sales sequence. And if they don't buy in that first week or two, you know, in the beginning, it usually is due to not enough trust. Usually, like if everything else matches, it's just the trust issue. So what we found is by, you know, staying in front of them. So if you have their email, it's easy. You know, we can do remarketing and email at the same time, you know, and then you just stay in front of them for about a year. You will see an uptick in sales from everyone around that time.
Right.
Whether it's a year, year and a half, but you'll see, like, you know, the first week, a lot of sales. Then they trickle in, and then you'll see another uptick a year from now, a year and a half, because people, just by being in front of them, they now trust you enough and they're going to buy from you. It's a weird thing, but it's, you know, it's really common with our testing within the space. Yeah.
What channels do you, I mean, again, this is a very broad marketing question, and it's obviously the answer is on a case-by-case basis, but where, when you talk to your clients, where do you see the most success from them in terms of generating leads? What particular channels?
Well, you know, like my first question is like, well, who's your ideal client?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because if you're looking for dentist, you know, you're going to probably look on Facebook or LinkedIn because it's easy to target them. If you're looking for someone trying to pass a Series 6 exam, or they're going to often ask those questions on Quora or on Google or on YouTube, you know, you need to think of your client. Like, you know, are you looking for a profession, or are you looking for a certain action that they need to take? You know, what is it that they're looking for? You know, if someone wants to become a freelancer, well, I mean, you know, YouTube and Google or Quora will probably be much better than Facebook, because how do you target someone who wants to become a freelancer on Facebook? You know, how do you get that? So, you know, this is like an answer that's very directly correlated to who your ideal client is. And, you know, most people don't know who that is because they haven't spoken to any clients, they haven't pre-sold. So, you know, that's a, you know, you have to tackle each battle at a time.
And I guess from my perspective, to sort of answer my own question, what we would say to clients in this these set of circumstances would be to test all of these channels and measure the success rate, because things like Google Analytics, things like the Facebook backend, and, you know, and the backend of all these training platforms can often tell you where customers have come from. So if you spend $1,000 in Facebook and you pick up, you know, 10 customers for a $1,500 course, then that makes complete sense, because to keep spending money there, because your, you know, your return on investment is great. But, you know, I would imagine a lot of people aren't measuring that properly. Do you find that?
Yeah. And this is why we make sure that any client that comes in, the first thing we set up is marketing tracking, right? So we know exactly, you know, if you sold a course, we can backtrack through all the channels and see where they came through the entire path, which email they clicked on, and which ad they came from or blog post. You know.
So, do you use Google Analytics for that, or do you have a different platform that you use?
So we, it's a combination of things, but we have a service called WeTrackYourMarketing.com, and we actually set up that. Once again, you know exactly what we're selling. And but we we've seen that every single person we've worked with, we set that up for. So last October, I went to a conference and I just, you know, put up that website with two paragraphs and a deal. And I think like 16 people bought, or 12, 16, I don't know. It was a big number from a small, you know, room. And I'm like, oh, people do want this, right? So, it's an easy way to start a business. But we do track, you know, we do track the marketing. It's very, very important. You know, you need the numbers, you need the data. Often what we've seen is that Google and Facebook lie about their conversions. And so they'll underreport or overreport, know, by maybe even 30%, which is crazy when, you know, you're spending a lot of money. So we needed an independent thing. Google Analytics is okay, but when you get to the inter-platform part of online courses, it often just lacks. So if you are bringing people into your website and driving them to a webinar, then going through an autoresponder, then going to Thinkific, and then, you know what I mean? So like five different platforms, it cannot handle that whole path. So it's good for the initial part. Like if you're only doing like maybe your website and Thinkific, you'll be okay. But when you start putting in autoresponders and other things which you want to track, because it's kind of good to know, right? If you wrote like a 10 email sequence, which link or email is working for you?
So,
you know, that's when you can really improve. But yeah, tracking is key in marketing. And this is one of the funniest things too. Like I always tell people, if you want to stop, you know, losing money on marketing, start tracking first.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess there's a lot of information there that you've given us today, and a lot of really good information for people who are thinking about building a course, or even people who've already built a course and, you know, and it's perhaps not been as successful as they thought it would be. I guess my last couple of questions for you would be, what courses have you seen out there? And they might be customers of yours, and they might not be customers. And you've mentioned a couple earlier, but people that do this stuff really well, who is out there sort of really kicking goals in the marketplace?
The ones I've seen most consistently to work really well is if you help someone pass an exam that they need for something.
Right.
I've seen those over and over just killing it. Because they have that external motivation, right? So it's two things. They'll have the value on the transformation, and they'll have almost like a timer running, a deadline timer, right? Because that job says you have until next week or next month. And if you don't, you know, so like you don't even need to tell them like, oh, I'm only selling this for 5 days. Like, no, they already have that. Now it's just, you know, you providing that. So I found those work really well. A lot of the business courses too, right? Like, you know, if I can promise you to get 30% more sales, or, you know, fix your conversions by 30%, or get more organic traffic. Like I found those working really well too. And the skill ones are hit and miss, man. Like there's a guy that teaches people how to play piano by teaching them like very popular songs. It's doing well, but I've seen others completely bomb with it, right?
Yeah.
Often what people find too is that the course is not what your market wants, right? So I'll give you an example. There's a friend of mine in the private practice space, different than the other person I mentioned. And he tried to sell courses. You know, he has a big audience and, you know, everything. And he found people don't want it.
Right.
These private practice people are so busy. They don't want to learn. They don't want to go through this. What they want is a membership. They want to be able to come in once a week with their one biggest problem, you know, and then just have it addressed and move on. And he made a lot of money this way. Then, you know, when you ask, which platform do you go after? Well, if you really think about private practices, you know, people, and this is a lot of psychology. This is where, you know, it helps to kind of understand some of this. They often work with problem people, a lot of, you know, like people spilling out their, you know, like problems to them all the time. And what I found with, you know, counselors, therapists, that often this is a lot for them, and they're not very happy people at home, right? Because, you know, if you hear about problems all the time, you're just not happy. What do unhappy people like doing? Unhappy people like posting motivational quotes.
Okay.
Right? So to find the private practice people, and I know this is such a weird thing, he started posting motivational posts towards them on Pinterest, and it became the number one traffic driver.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, like, you follow your customer, and often it's not the most obvious thing. He didn't go after private practice people on LinkedIn because he tried it and it didn't work well. It didn't happen on Facebook, but he found what they want, and they want to read inspirational things and find inspirational things for themselves to repost on their social media, and they were looking for it on Pinterest, right? So
Last question. If somebody wants to get hold of you, I'll obviously repeat the email address, wemarketonlinecourses.com. Is that the best way of finding you? Are you on LinkedIn, or is there any other channels that they could ask you questions?
I am on LinkedIn. Really easy to find. If you go to Smart Brand Marketing, and then just click the contact form, because that's like the brand that all my sub-brands are under, right? So if you just go on that, click my contact form, you can reach me really easily, and then you'll find whatever I'm working on, whether it's the WeTracker marketing or WeMarket online courses, whatever else I come up with, it's always under that umbrella.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Mate, thank you very much for your time. It has been, it's been very, very interesting. I think even more so given the times that we're going through at the moment, and hopefully people out there that are thinking about, you know, pivoting their business so to take it more online can take some of the ideas and suggestions that you've made today and actually have some success with them. So thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That's it for episode number 86. Thank you very much for tuning in. It has been a fantastic, very informative podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you get a chance, please rate and review us on iTunes. Otherwise, we look forward to welcoming you back for the next podcast. Thank you.